Welcome to WPM, Writing, Publishing, Marketing. This is the August 2018 event, the 14th in the series. So we're into our second year of doing this series. And it's presented every month on the second Tuesday of each month by Mott Publishing and WSCA Community Radio in Portsmouth, New Hampshire. We record these events. We have a live audience. And I publish the podcasts. You can get to the podcast through our website at Mott Publishing. That's M-A-A-T, mottpublishing.net. You can also find them on Podomatic and on iTunes. Just search for WPM or search for Mott Publishing. Every month we have three authors who do brief presentations, one on writing, one on publishing, and one on marketing. And then we open it up for Q&A, and the Q&A can run as long as half an hour, sometimes an hour and a half, depending on the liveliness of the live audience. I do ask that the audience save their questions until after all three presenters have done their brief presentations. And so I'm going to give you a little bit of information about what WPM is, how it came to be, and what the purpose of it is. My wife and I are Mott Publishing. We are literally a mom-and-pop publishing company, and we help people to self-publish. We published a cookbook about 7 years ago. Marilyn wrote the cookbook, and I wrote two CDs of original music that is included with the cookbook. And we went through a publisher named Infinity Publishing, and we knew nothing about publishing. Our daughter did the layout of the cookbook, and we presented the PDF to Infinity. And they instructed us how to carry on from there. They did the layout and the design and the printing and the binding, and they got it on Amazon, and they got it on Baker and Taylor, is that what it is? Baker and Taylor and so forth. After a year or two, we wanted to put out a second edition of the cookbook, and we found that we were not really happy with the communication we were having with Infinity. They were not answering our emails, they were not sending us reports, they were not answering our phone calls. And so for the second edition, we decided we would start our own publishing company. So I did the revision of the layout, and I got the ISBN and all that sort of thing, and learned a lot about publishing. Then we started, and along the way we started doing book events here in the Seacoast area. We did bookstores and libraries and a kitchen shop and all kinds of things. And we met a lot of writers, and a lot of writers were interested in self-publishing. So we started offering advice to them and taking over the nuts and bolts of their self-publishing, providing what services they needed. And what we found was there were a lot of really good writers' groups and writer activities here in the Seacoast area, but they were all kind of either niche-oriented or very sharply focused. There might be a writers' group for romance writers or for horror writers or for YA writers. There might be a workshop on how to do your first revision of the book or something very specific. So we decided we wanted to offer a series that would involve a lot of different writers and that would, in 30 minutes, cover everything from the moment you get an idea for a book through the writing, the editing, the revising, working with a publisher, getting it printed, and then, as I always say, the really hard part, selling the book, marketing. So that's what this event is all about, and we're going to start with Ross Batchelder, and I'll let him introduce himself. He's going to talk about writing.
All right, it might be a moment of honesty to say that when I got ready to publish the book I've written, I thought, I don't like the sound of Ross Batchelder, it's harsh. Then I thought, well, why don't I just put my middle name in it? So my author's name is Ross Allen Batchelder, that's all. But other than that, I'm Ross Batchelder. Well, I'm a writer, a musician, and most recently, 20 years ago, I began getting deeply involved in the visual arts. So I exhibit my works, multimedia works, and I'm a real maverick as a musician. I take all sorts of gigs, but I'm not in a traditional ensemble. Everything from art openings to other special events, and solo recitals, and I'm happy with that. While writing my first book, I coined the term arts multiple because I was so tired of sounding like a boor by telling people the things I do when I was at an event. I thought, well, at least in writing, wouldn't it be handy to be able to have a term that would describe somebody who was not born to be a specialist, incapable of being a specialist? So then I floated the word arts multiple and waited for somebody to use it, somebody who was somewhere else in the room, and it finally happened in Rochester, New Hampshire. Somebody said, oh yeah, I know a guy, he's an arts multiple. Well, and that's had good work. Well, anyway, I'm going to be addressing people who perhaps are today like I was 4 years ago, wanting badly to become published authors. So my message, I'm going to deliver my message, and it's meant to inspire and encourage those who want to be where I am today and are probably where I was 4 years ago, worrying that I couldn't make it happen. As everyone knows, planet Earth is absolutely swarming with writers, seasoned writers, best-selling writers, struggling writers, and lazy writers. And then there are the gifted writers, the mediocre writers, the incompetent writers, the do-it-yourself writers, the MFA writers, and the writer's block writers. And perhaps most of all, this little orb is home to untold legions of wannabe writers, the poor frustrated souls who just know they have a book in them somewhere but can't seem to dig down inside themselves, pull their thoughts and feelings together, and get them down on paper. I have been several of the writers on that list over the years, many of them simultaneously, including, for a painfully long time, the yearning, pleading wannabe author. Oh, I've written a lot, all right. No question about that. It's probably fair to say I've penned enough words in the past half century to pave a six-lane highway to the moon and back again. I've written fiction, poetry, newspaper columns, business proposals, essays, fine and performing arts reviews, musical comedies, and the music for those comedies. And yet somehow none of that writing ever managed to coalesce into the thing I wanted most to achieve, a book, until after three hard-working years, I finally got my bleep together and made it happen. I now have one book in the marketplace and another one well on the way, and those two facts have made a world of difference, an overwhelmingly positive difference, in my feelings about myself. I always had excuses at the ready for not having done it. Too busy with work and family. Too much time maintaining my skills as a musician, artist, and theater guy. Too inexperienced in the art of living to have anything truly book-worthy to say. Whenever anyone would see a stack of books on my table at a restaurant and tell me I look like a professor, they'd next ask that one big scary question. So, are you an author? After which I'd break out in a cold sweat and mumble the awful negative. That's because I wasn't the thing I wanted so much to be, and I had no credible excuse for my poor unpublished condition. Well, wonderful. I can now say I am indeed an author, but when you think about it, what good is that information to anyone but me and to the few people who have been curious enough about my book to either peek at it on Amazon or pick it up in a local bookstore and then take a calculated risk and actually buy the thing? To those who've already run the literary gauntlet, who've penned a book and gotten it on the market, anything I'd have to say about becoming an author probably has little value. But to the aspiring author, the man or woman who today is every bit as desperate as I was 4 years ago to attach that magic word to my identity, I feel reasonably certain that I have some truly worthwhile advice to offer. Some of it purely practical, some of it actually life-changing. If the act of becoming an author had the power to transform my opinion of myself, of my worth to the world, then surely it can transform yours too. So for what it's worth, here we go. A lot of what Stephen King said about writing in his book On Writing, what Natalie Goldberg said in her book Writing Down the Bones, and what Ray Bradbury said in his book Zen and the Art of Writing is no more than common sense, experience-based advice. By all means, read those authors if you're hungry for a writerly kick in the ass, and what writer doesn't need that once in a while? If, on the other hand, you were to sidestep the pundits, look within yourself and ask a few hard questions, like, for instance, why is it so hard for me to write? Or what is it that I'm so afraid of? And if you were to answer those questions honestly, then you'd be much closer to becoming the author you've always wanted to be. What King, Goldberg, and Bradbury did in the beginning, and what you surely need to do, not yesterday, not tomorrow, but today, is to simply sit your butt down and write, because the enemy of progress, of realizing your most urgent, heartfelt dreams, has always been and always will be procrastination. Time to write then, no excuses. Fine, you say, but write about what? Really, the answer shouldn't be all that hard to come by. The truth is that we're all so busy and so distracted that we often fail to remember that there's a vast orchard of ideas right there between our ears, bursting with succulent fruits and ripe for the picking. The human mind, more precisely your mind, is a vessel like no other, a one-of-a-kind inner library filled to overflowing with ideas and feelings, experiences and impressions that to the aspiring writer ought to be seen as an unimaginably rich minefield of resources. Your challenge is to figure out what to do with all those resources, how to sort them out, which ones to focus on, where to begin. I call it mining the vessel, and you can do it too. No, it's not always easy, but experience should tell us that nothing truly worth doing is ever easy. Must one have fancy credentials to be a successful writer? Absolutely not. In the minds of many aspiring authors, an MFA in writing seems like the Holy Grail, an essential document for the serious writer and the one true path to writerly success. But for me, this is a ridiculous assumption. If the MFA gives you the training and impetus to take yourself seriously as a writer, then by all means go and get yourself an MFA. But if, like me, you're a hidebound maverick and a proven self-starter, you can easily do without the sheepskin. And really, it's the same with the ways in which you as an aspiring author can actually get your book into print. If you simply must have a contract with a major publishing house to feel authentic as a writer, then let the querying begin. If, on the other hand, you're either sick and tired of rejection slips or don't want to wait around for lightning to strike, then do it yourself or hook up with a self-publishing firm that will do a whole lot of the work for you. Yes, for a price, but it was worth every penny for me, and if you choose your publishing supporter group wisely, you will be thrilled that you did. It's a brand new world out there. If, like me, you have an independent streak and would rather go it alone, then you absolutely do not need to have a publishing house contract in order to become a published author. But with or without the MFA or that coveted contract with a major publishing house, one thing is certain. Without a strong work ethic, a whole lot of rigorous self-imposed discipline, that book you want so badly to produce is not going to happen. Another essential piece of equipment for the aspiring author is a willingness to sacrifice. For instance, if you love smoking, but you want worse to have healthy lungs and a good long life, then it stands to reason that the camels will have to go. Conversely, if you covet your leisure time, but it's keeping you from your work as a writer, then you must be prepared to lob off a considerable portion of it to make room for the, and I think the published guy in the back will agree with me, for the hundreds of hours of grinding, solitary work it will take to bring that book to life. And finally, I beseech you to add these last four critically important self-assertions to your writerly mantra. One, get over your fear of failure. Took me forever to do that. How can you ever hope to succeed as an author if you haven't written a book and given it a chance to succeed? It's a lesson I wish I'd learned long ago, but it's a lesson it's never too late to learn. Two, divest yourself of the notion that you must be a full-time writer to be a successful writer. Only a tiny handful of writers make their money only from writing. The rest of them, including average hardworking blokes like me, wedge their writing time into a complex network of obligations without which we could never keep our writerly ship afloat. And besides, our writing is greatly enriched by the things we do to make money when we're not writing. Some people look at the job you have as the enemy of your writing career or your art career, but I think it's just the opposite. If you think of your workplace as a place where you can get ideas for writing, then suddenly your workplace is not such a bad place to be. I was off script there, but there. Stop measuring yourself and your writing. That was threes. Three, stop measuring yourself and your writing against the writing of established best-selling authors. If you've allowed yourself to become a star worshiper, if you've fallen into the trap of copying the voices of the famous in hopes of becoming famous, you'll never find your own voice as a writer. And without a distinctive voice of some kind, it's highly unlikely that you'll ever be taken seriously as an aspiring author. Excuse me. And last but not least, number four, believe in yourself, in the goodness, the authenticity, and the redeeming social value of all of those thoughts and feelings trapped between your ears, begging to come out and play. Buckle down, mind the vessel, aim high. It's only then that you will finally experience the thrill of seeing your first proud book on the top shelf of your home library. It's a moment that will change your life forever and for all the right reasons. Thank you.
Thank you, Ross. Very well done.
Thanks.
Before I introduce Michelle, I do have to, in the interest of full disclosure, say that she is a Mott Publishing author. Mm-hmm. And we published her first book. And we're now, in fact, I should be home this very moment working on her second book, which will be coming out very soon. I'm sure not soon enough for Michelle, but very soon. So now our next presenter is, author and presenter is Michelle Lowry.
Thank you. Yes, I'm eagerly awaiting this book to manifest itself, but I know that Steve is also a very busy person, so I do have patience. I am really thrilled to be here. I want to thank Steve and Marilyn for inviting me to do this. And it's been quite an amazing journey to take something that sat in my computer as a Word document for 10 years and finally, 2 years ago, have it actually be a paperback. And the process of getting it there was what I wanted to talk about today, because it was all about avoiding the publishing. And if you don't publish, you don't get a paperback. So it really was quite the transition of, I had written this book and rewritten it and edited it and re-edited it and kept changing it. And eventually it was kind of complete. And I had no idea how to actually get this book from my computer into physical form, is how I used to say. And every so often I would go online and I would look at all the different ways that you could publish a book. And I get very easily overwhelmed and I get very easily frustrated when I don't know what I'm trying to do, yet I'm trying to look for the answer to something I'm trying to figure out. And what I realized was that there are many different ways to create a book and publish it. And one is that you have one of the big companies publish your book for you, and it's extortionately expensive. And I didn't really know too much about it. And then the other ways were different ways of self-publishing, and everything would be written out on all of the Google things that I found, and I could never quite figure it out. And so every time I got excited and I started looking online, I'd get totally overwhelmed and frustrated, and I'd just say, I'm not doing this. And another year would go by, and I'd try again, and I'd try again. And then I had an email come through from Hay House, and they were running a competition to write something in fiction. And there was a deadline to write this book, and it had to have so many words in it. And then you gave it in, and they checked it, and potentially, if you won, you would become a Hay House author. And I sat there and I went, oh, how cool would it be to be a Hay House author? Because I've followed so many of the people that are Hay House writers and speakers, and it would just be such a great way to send the message I was looking for. So I started out writing a completely different book. And because I'm not a dedicated writer, because I have my own business, it never got to the deadline. And it just kind of sat, and that's still sitting in my computer unfinished. And it got left. And then I ended up going back and forth with this original book, trying to get it published. And what happened was that I knew I wanted to see this book published, but I had kind of given up on trying to get it done. I just couldn't figure out how to do it. And I was at a health fair one day, I don't remember how many years ago, maybe 2 or 3 years ago, and Marilyn Carter was one of the practitioners at this health fair that I was at. And we got chatting, and we're talking about what we do and the work that we do, and we had this incredibly instant connection. And she started to talk about publishing, and how her and her husband Steve helped people to publish their books if they had never done it before, or they just needed help and they didn't know which direction to go in. And all of a sudden, all the pennies dropped, the light bulb went on, the aha moment happened, and I looked at Marilyn and I said, I think I have a book for you to publish, and I think they're the people I've been waiting for many, many years. And so the process began from there, and it has been such a fantastic experience to delegate completely all responsibility for getting my book published. And they were great, and they sat with me, and we went through the process. We went through what it took to create a book. So Steve would say, well, how big do you want your book? And I'd say, I have no idea. And he'd say, how big do you want the print? And I'd say, I have no idea. And he'd say, well, if you do it this way, you'll get this kind of look. And if you do it this way, you get this kind of look. And I said, whatever you think, I'm totally fine with, because I have no idea what I'm doing. And then we talked about the cover and getting the cover created, and they gave me some ideas of artists that I could use. And I've had somebody designing my marketing stuff for a really long time. She's local in Dover, and she knows me really well. And I said, well, I'd like to get her to design the cover of the book because she knows me. And Steve and Marilyn said that was fine. You know, she just had to send them the file in a certain way. And then Steve talked about ISBN numbers, and all I knew about an ISBN number was the squiggle thing that was on the back of a book that they scanned when they wanted to buy it or look for it. I knew nothing else about it. And he said, and then there are library numbers, and you need a library number. And he said, I can tell you exactly how to get both numbers if you want to know how, or I can do it for you. And I said, why don't you just do it for me? Because I know if I take this home, it will never get done, and it'll be another 10 years before I get anything out. And so Steve just completely took care of the design of the book as far as the size and the print and all the numbers and all the logging here and the registration there. And he just took everything over. And so it was a really fantastic experience to be able to work with them so closely. And Marilyn and Steve also do editing, so they would read the book and then they'd come back to me and I would read the book, and we eventually got it to a place where we felt it was in a good space to actually be printed out. And what was really funny about the entire process is I did nothing to get my book published, and I feel really proud that I finally found a way to publish my book without being frustrated. And I was actually enjoying the process, because all I had to do was keep loving my book and keep envisioning the fact that it was going to get out there, and I'd found two amazing people to help me get it done. And they did not leave my side the entire time, no matter what questions I had. It was just a really fantastic experience. And it became really pleasurable, really easy, and super exciting to know this was actually going to happen. And also, with all of the research that they had done, they have some printers that they use up in Portland, Maine, where you don't have to print 10,000 copies of something in order to get your book printed. You can actually print in small batches. So for somebody like me, to be able to print 60 or 70 books and do an event and see where that goes, and then contact the printers again and say, hey, can I have another 60? Again, just made the whole thing totally affordable, totally doable, without being incredibly overwhelming. And so the pivotal moment was the day that Marilyn said, we have the first copy of your book. And I went over to the house, and it was such an emotional experience to have in my hand my book. And it's taken me 2 years to actually say I'm an author. It just went on my website because I didn't consider myself an author. But to hold this book and say, oh my God, I did it, was the most amazing experience. And because of the topic of this book, all I ever wanted to do was get it out to people. I didn't really understand fully how to do that. And so Steve and Marilyn have helped me along the way to help me get the book marketed and get it out there. And as Steve had said earlier, I have finished writing my second book, and we're in the process of editing that, and I just got the book design cover for that. And again, it's like, here you are. Here's my book. Please make it happen. And then the other amazing experience that I had was that I really wanted to do an ebook, an audiobook of my first book. And I wanted to read it just because I wanted to be a part of this whole process. And so I sat with Steve one day and we spent the day in his studio, and I learned how to do an audiobook and read it through. And learned what it meant to pause and restart and keep my voice the same and keep the volume the same. And Steve, again, stepped me through every process the whole way through. So my first book is also an audiobook, and it just completed it, just to have it there as an audiobook. It's also an ebook, just completed that whole process. But I have to say, there was no way I could ever have done this without them. So I am totally grateful that they stepped into my life and they actually accepted me and my book to bring it to fruition. So thank you, thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Well done. Yes. The audio book is done. I need to do a little tweaking of it, and I want to get it on Audible. And Audible is a good example of the kind of thing that Michelle was talking about. You can go on and look at the Audible site, and you can read all of their documentation and easily get overwhelmed. You know, you have to have whatever it is, 3.7 seconds of silence before the first chapter begins, and so many seconds of silence between chapters, and it can only be so many decibels and all this crazy stuff. So it's getting it right to send out to an audio publisher. Is the process. I've never done that part of it before. I've done lots of music CDs. I've never published an audio book, so that's another thing that Michelle has been very patient with, and we hope to get that done very soon. I'm going to talk a little bit about marketing, and before I do, I'm going to be using some visuals. So for those of you listening to the podcast, I want to remind you that you can get these podcasts by going to mottpublishing.net. There's a link right at the top of our first page. And if you go to the menu, there's a writer's journal. If you click on the writer's journal, there will be little entries about each of the podcasts. Actually, some of them are missing because I'm behind with my work as usual. But basically, I take the podcast and I give a brief description of who the authors were and what they were talking about. And to try to make it simpler, I put in some highlights. You know, Jim Kelly's talk started at 13 minutes and 7 seconds, and at 15 minutes he's talking about how he won the Hugo Award or whatever it was. But something that if you're looking for a nugget, it will get you in there. And I started doing visuals a few months ago in this series. And what I do is I put the visuals into that writer's journal entry. I give you a link to a PDF. So if you're listening to this podcast, you can go and look in the writer's journal and click on that link, and you can see the visuals that I'm using here. Okay, so I wanted to talk about a book launch plan. I've been working on a novel for, believe it or not, 46 years. I started it, the first notes I have are for 1972, but I know the idea came to me shortly after we got married, and we're going to have our 50th wedding anniversary next month. So I've been working on this for a long time, and I'm revising it, and I want to get it out before the end of the year, certainly. And so I've done a lot of research about a book launch marketing plan. So I started making notes to myself to gather my articles and to cull some tips from the articles. So I went to my research database, and you'll notice this says No Fred Cooking Cookbook Marketing Plan. So I started this back in 2011 when we were first publishing the cookbook. And as you can see, there's a lot of stuff in here. I'm just kind of scrolling through it and showing all the hundreds and hundreds of entries that I have in here. So this is the kind of thing that Michelle was talking about, that when you start researching this stuff, you can easily get overwhelmed. And what I found was helpful for me was to just find this is a mind mapping program. It's called FreePlan. They say it's mind mapping and knowledge management. And basically you can just drop things in there, like you can grab a web link and drop it in here, and then come back to it later. And you can search and filter, and if you want to assign tags to it, like publishing or marketing or writing or whatever, then you can do that. So it gave me a way to collect all of this information and just look at the things that I wanted to look at. Like, for example, I have this Center for the Book in New Hampshire, New Hampshire State Library, highlighted, because that's something I want to research a little bit more. Whereas this finding your beta readers. I just clicked on this today and see, and I saw that the website no longer exists anymore. So I just put an X on there to say don't waste time on this. So that's what I meant by when I wrote myself this note to cull from the articles. And what I came up with was only two. Let me get to another piece of software here. Only two things that really on pre-book launch marketing that I thought were really helpful. One was a website called The Creative Pen, spelled P-E-N-N. And I don't remember the author's name, but she had a post. She has a lot of, she has a blog, and she has a lot of posts. She had one on marketing. And it's all the usual stuff that you hear all the time. If you're going to be writing a book and you're going to market it, write posts on your own blog. Well, a lot of readers, a lot of would-be authors would read that and go, oh my God, now I have to have a blog? What is a blog? How does one blog? Publish and promote posts on my own blog. Design social media images, and that's another showstopper for me because I'm not visual at all. That's a showstopper. I can't draw a straight line or even a good squiggly line. write social media posts. Well, we all do that. Schedule social media posts. Write a guest blog for fill in the blank for some guest post on some other site. Pitch podcasts, radio shows for interviews. Well, that's what we're doing here. Pitch news blog, newspaper and blogs, etc. Perform an interview, promote interview. Ross did that here. He was on, what's her name? Writers. What was the show you were on? No, sorry, it was Chris. Chris, what show were you on?
I didn't know.
Pauline Hawkins, sorry, I was drawing a blank. Chris is going to be our guest next month, and so he was here interviewed by Pauline Hawkins. And for a long time on my to-do list, we know Pauline. In fact, this event that we're doing now actually grew out of her idea, and she decided to make hers a radio show, and we decided to make ours a podcast. But if you're in the area and you're either you have a book coming out or you have one out now, you could contact Pauline. What's the name of her show? Do you remember, Chris?
All In.
All In. Okay. And she has writers on there all the time. She has other artists as well, dancers and so on and so forth. But that's what this this bit about pitch to get an interview and then do the interview. That's what all of that is about. If any of you have listened to any of these podcasts before, you know that I am not a big fan of social media. I'm very organized and systematized about it. I do it all the time. I hate it, and I do Google Analytics and I do my own analytics, and I find that it does almost no good whatsoever. But I keep doing it because if you don't, people say, "Oh, you're not really interested in trying to promote yourself." The next thing comes directly from Infinity Publishing. They have a blog, and they have writers write for their blog. They have their writers write for their blog. I wrote an article on there called it Marketing by Wandering Around. And so if you go to Infinity Publishing, you can find that. This one is a 25-step book marketing plan. Well, you know, I was telling Marilyn, it's the years ago when I was writing for magazines, the tip was always have a number in your title because people love numbers. 10 ways to fry an egg. Six ways, and it's got to be a small number. If it's 17 ways to fry an egg, nobody's going to read it. So if you just look now when you're on Facebook and you're going to see, six ways to polish your hubcaps, and it's usually what you're doing wrong. Five things that you've been doing wrong with your car, that get the guilt trip going on you. So this is 25, which is already too many, but some of them are actually pretty good. So I'm just going to go through them quickly and give you my idea of how I'm going to use or not use these things to promote my upcoming book. Before I do that, I want to give you a little bit of background on the book because I'm going to pitch this according to how these things suit me and my book. So here's what they call the elevator pitch or the blurb for this novel that I've been working on for 46 years, and I'm still revising the blurb as I revise the book. Eva was born underground in the Boston subway, the T. Her mother works in the flower shop and her father in the information booth at Park Street Station. She's lived her whole life in the T and never been above ground. It's 1968 and she's 22. She meets Jim, an English major at UMass Boston and a blues bass player. When he graduates, he'll lose his draft deferment. Because he's opposed to the Vietnam War, he's considering the Underground Railroad to escape to Canada. Eva wants to emerge from the underground. Jim wants to escape into the underground. Okay, so that has certain themes and certain potential audiences. The advice here is start a MailChimp account or an email account on some other mailing system. Have a mailing list is crucial for future marketing. Well, we all know that. I looked at MailChimp and I find it too complicated, but most people that I know do use it, so that's okay. I'm a programmer, so I write my own mail program. Look for ARC readers. ARC, or advanced reader copies, are books you send out before publication in exchange for an honest review. And so this in red here is my note to myself. Check reviews on book in your genre to find regular reviewers who welcome submissions. So that part I thought was a useful tip. But what is my genre? Well, it's literary fiction, but it's also kind of fantasy and it's historical fiction, and so I'm going to have to start looking in all of those areas. So what I did was make a little list for myself of just some of the topics that are in the book. Well, a lot of it is about history because it's set in mid-60s in Boston. Most of it takes place in the Boston subway system. There are ghosts, and some of them are from the Revolutionary War, so there's history of the Revolutionary War. There's talk about abolition, there's talk about literature, there's talk about education, UMass Boston. It's the 60s, so there's blues, rock, and jazz scene. As you know, the main character is a blues bass player, so there are scenes happening in clubs. There are concerts and things. And then, of course, the drug scene of the 60s was a big thing, and so there's that. And then there's the anti-war movement. So not only do I want to look for genres, but I want to look for people who are interested in these areas. For example, I'm a member of the Boston Street Railway Association, and it's people who are fans of the Boston subway. And so they go on my mailing list and somehow get tagged that way. I'll just hit on a couple of other these things that I think I want to research. It says, upload a copy of your book to InstaFreebie. Well, I've been researching this for years and I've never heard of InstaFreebie, so I made a note to myself to research that. What it does allows, apparently what it does is allow your ARC, Advanced Reader Copy readers, to go on there and get the format that they like, Kindle or whatever it is. Contact Bookraiser to get more. Okay, I don't know what Bookraiser is. Another note to myself, research Bookraiser. Research Facebook ads. Note to self, no. let's see if I made any more notes on here. Research and find book bloggers in your genre, like ARC reviewers. Book bloggers read and review books, but they post the reviews on their own site. Note to self, research this. I've had a website for music for 17 years or something like that, and I've cross-posted with other musicians, and it really hasn't helped much. So I don't hold out much hope for that. And out of all of these 25 points, those are the only ones that I found were really of a great deal of interest to me. I will talk about a couple of things briefly, and then we'll turn it over to question and answers. A couple of things that I need to do for myself, and you, if you are about to publish a book, need to do for yourself is you have to find alpha readers, beta readers, ARC readers, and early release readers. Now, different people have different definitions of these. I've talked about this before in other podcasts, but basically alpha readers means people who are very tolerant because it's like alpha software. If you're using alpha software, it means that it's really not ready to go out to anybody. So if you're going to use it, get ready for your computer to blow up. And if you're willing to do that, then you're an alpha tester. Beta readers our people, it's like beta software. It's almost ready to go out to the public. There may be a few bugs that depend on what kind of software you're running and what's going on your computer and so on and so forth. So beta readers are people who are going to read it when it's almost ready to be published. Advanced reader copies are people who are going to read it after you've gotten your feedback from alpha readers, beta readers, done all of the corrections, edited it one more time, and you think that it's ready for release. And the version that they see is going to be the version that's going to be released. You're just trying to get it out there so you can get a blurb to put on the back of the book. And many times authors get blurbs on the back of their book from people who haven't even read the book. They've only read a little bit of it. And of course, forewords have been like that for forever. Foreword is often written with just an understanding that the person writing the foreword knows the author, knows what the author is writing about, and believes that the author can do the job. Early release reviewers are the ones who you want to get your copy of the book the minute it gets on Amazon or Kobo or whatever, and within a day or two write some reviews, because Amazon sells things largely in terms of counts of people who have done reviews on the book. Now, having said all of that, I know two people who have just released books. They've both been on this show. One of them spent a year publicizing pre-release. He's very well known. We've done lots of book events with him. I won't say his name because I don't want to give it away. But after when the book first came out, he posted on Facebook the picture of the book, and it's on Facebook. Please go and give it a review. And he posted things like, "Why should you give book reviews?" And he'd give 10 reasons why book reviews are good for authors and so forth. Well, after all that, when I posted my review maybe a week into the release, I was only the 14th one to review the book. So that, to me, is overwhelming. That's very discouraging. If somebody who's that good, he's got 5 or 6 other books out. I own them all. I've read them all. He's a great writer. But if with all of that, the best you can do is 14 reviews on Amazon, that's scary. There must be another way to sell the book, because that doesn't seem like it's going to work. The other author I was talking about, the book had been out for over a year, and she had only had about 13 reviews, and one of them was absolutely a terrible review, like a 1-star review, an insulting review, and totally wrong. I know the woman, I've read her book, I've spent time with her. I know that it's a good book and she's a good writer, and that this review was totally wrong. Amazon bubbled that bad review to the top of those 13 reviews. Mm. So every time I talk about reviews, I always try to present the negative side that few people really want to talk about. All writers will tell you, you've got to get reviews to sell your books. And what I'm telling you is, first of all, it's hard to get reviews. And I know from my 50 years of being a musician, reviews don't sell CDs. They don't get you gigs. They don't get you fans. What gets you gigs is going out and doing a gig, and somebody hears you and likes you, and you get to do another gig. What gets you fans is that somebody comes out and hears you perform. So I'm going to do all of this stuff because that's what you're going to do. But I always like to say I do it all with a grain of salt. Okay, I'm going to leave it at that. And I want to, before I turn it over to Q&A, I just want to once again, for those of you listening to the podcast, to remind you that you can find the podcasts on mottpublishing.net. You can find them on Podomatic, P-O-D-A-M-A-T-I-C, podomatic.com, and on iTunes. Okay, so I am going to turn it over to Q&A, but I do want to mention that I do ask each author to answer each question. If you'd like to direct your question to one of us, please feel free to do that. But after that person has answered, I would like the other two authors to also answer so that we get 3 different perspectives on all of the questions. Now, this is always where things get crazy because there are thousands of people in the audience. I know those of you listening to the podcast can't see this. It gets kind of rowdy, but I will try to keep it under control. So, who would like to answer? Who would like to ask the first question? Yes.
Now that you've had a taste of publishing, do you plan on doing like a series or just different books or just two?
I'm going to repeat the question, make sure the microphone picks it up. And the question is directed at Michelle. Is there a series in the future?
I don't know necessarily a series. The two books were very much life experiences that I shared through the animals that I've had. And so my guess will be that it'll be a series as far as it'll have that same topic, but the direction of the book and the information and the guidance of the book will be different each time. That's how I work through the animals, and so that's how both books have been created.
Michelle, if you would just take a minute, I'm going to ask Ross to do the same thing. Just take a minute to describe your two books.
Okay, thank you. So the first book is called Hindsight is 2020, and it's a book that was inspired to me when one of my dogs passed away, and the process that he guided me through to help him transition, and how much I learned about that process from his perspective. And in my work, I work with animals, and so I now can bring that perspective to my clients and help them go through that same process. The second book is written with my horse, who I've had for 20 years now, and it's basically our life together. So his life before me, my life before him, how we came together, and then everything that he's taught me in the last probably 18 years of building me into the person that I am today. And it's been such a fascinating journey that I just had to write about it. Thank you.
Thank you. Russ, tell us about your book.
Okay, my first book, I'll start out by not really starting out and say that I fought with my editor, whom I hired to help me through the process. She lives in Cincinnati. She took a look at me and said privately, he must be writing a memoir. Well, I don't like being pigeonholed like that, so I fought her. And she said, I don't think you should be apologizing for writing what others perceived as a memoir. I guess she assumed that I, if I'm older, and I was noticeably older than her, she was 38 and I'm 74, I decided that it didn't matter to me if she thought it was a memoir. But I don't think it is. It has 20 chapters. It has 9 very, very short stories. Each story was written to respond to a drawing I'd done years before. And then it had 84 illustrations, and it was a monster. And the best way to characterize the book is that it's the story of more than 50 years of immersion in the fine and performing arts. And my other book is the next book, the one that I'm nearly done with the first draft, is short stories, 12 of them. It's called, I should give you the title of the first book. Let's see. Happy Dog Walks the Sad Man, the remarkable, I'm probably going to fumble it and not mention it. Yeah, it's over there. Yeah, that's so funny. It's like I do, I really want to talk. Yeah, if you grab the book, I want to get it right. It's not easy to go blabbing about your book. I don't really enjoy that part. It feels like I'm on stage. Yeah. Happy Dog Walks the Sad Man, the remarkably varied adventures of a confirmed arts multiple. Okay. Got in trouble with my editor. Or in a way, yeah, I did, because she said, unfortunately, they're not going to be able to name both the title and the subtitle. You're going to have to decide which one you want. Fair warning about making certain that the true title covers what would make the book appealing to your reader. I think I ran into trouble with that, as much as I love subtitles. The next one is called Weird Anomalies. Tales best read in the twilight hours, and I obviously completely gone in a different direction. I have to say that at my age, I'm not looking to develop a career and have an identity as a certain kind of writer. In fact, temperamentally, I'm completely unsuited to do that. I just want to write, and I want to be taken seriously as a writer, and I want to be able to be proud of the quality of my writing, and I want to try several kinds of writing before I buy the farm, right? So I think my third one's going to be a novel, because I want to find out what that's like. And I'd like to leave it with this comment. Right after I finally had my book ready to be published, a dear artist friend of mine, I told her, you know, I'm so happy that I know I'm going to die having published a book. And she said, well, that's really stupid. Why are you talking one book? Why are you not talking three books? And you know something? I went home that day. For some reason, I had it in my mind that I was not done, but that's all I really needed. And I went home and immediately started publishing my second book, and now I work from the number three, which gives you a great sense of future. Yeah, there.
Thanks. I'll address the question briefly, too. I do have in mind, my novel that I'm finishing up is called All Cars Run to Park Street, and I do have a sequel in mind, but I can't tell you what the sequel is, because then I'd have to give away the ending of my first book. Any other questions? There's scurrying around the microphones and vying for space. Yes, way in the back there.
This is directed to everyone. Have you thought of non-traditional ways to reach younger readers? I think as authors, our competition is, you know, it's not necessarily other books. It's other forms of media or even, you know, an expensive cup of coffee. Sometimes a cup of coffee at Starbucks is the same price as a Kindle book. So how do you reach that younger audience, the YA or the new adult, or the audience that doesn't read as much as the older audience?
Okay, I'll repeat part of the question for the microphone. How do you reach the younger audience? Let's start with Ross.
Goodness, I have to wonder how many people in the younger audiences would be interested in what I do, which doesn't mean it isn't playful and full of life at all. I think the best way to... I witnessed it at Berwick Library, where you and Marilyn appeared. In fact, I saw a children's book author I taught with in elementary school for a few years, and those kids were absolutely enthralled in her library presentation. She wanted them to know how it felt to her to be an author. And they went nuts, and since the parents came with them, I think she's marketing her book through the parents, practically speaking. I can't, it's the best of all possible ways, in my opinion, to do it is to find audiences of young people and be exciting for them to listen to. Children have a low tolerance for boring people, right? They don't get it. And use a sense of humor, because kids live and die by their sense of humor.
Michelle, you want to address that? And then we'll have a follow-up.
Sure. My thought around that is the audiobooks, because I know the younger generation multitask beyond what I even understand as multitasking. And with at least with audiobooks, they can be listening while doing. And that, for me, I think that would be one way to get to an audience that is... has learned to not sit still and to learn to constantly be doing something, and it would be just another way to get through to them.
Can I do a real short addendum to that?
Sure.
And that's simply that I understand from all my reading and observations that children's book writing is not in any way inferior to adult book writing. I envy those who know how to write a really good book, and that's something I don't think I have the time for or the focus. And I'm nuts about Lawrence Sendak and all their, is that right? Marie Sendak. Fantastic stuff. Some of my best reading is really children's books. That's all.
Yeah, I'll just briefly say my characters are what they, I guess the new term is new adults. Apparently people who are 18, 19, 20, 21 in that age bracket. So I guess my characters would target that group. My challenge will be, there are going to be a lot of old fogies like me who want to read the book because it's talking about when they were young, when they were new adults. So my challenge will be to reach younger readers than the new adults, and I have no idea how to do that. There was a follow-up question.
Yeah, when I said younger readers, I meant 18 to 40.
Oh. 18 to 40.
I know children's books are separate.
Well, for some people that would be not 70 yet. Youthful readers.
For the people listening to the podcast, I do want to mention that we have had authors on here who write not... if we had a children's author, I don't think we've had a... Well, that's not really children. He's aiming at middle school. We had KM Doherty as a guest on here, and that podcast is available, so check that out. And he talks a lot about marketing to younger readers, and I won't tell you his whole story, but he's great at it. We've seen him, he's done a couple of our events, we've seen him perform, and he does reach not only the middle school, but the younger kids. So there's a guy that you can learn from.
And adults,
yeah, he does. He talks about how to, when you're writing a book for middle school children or younger people, how to also target the adults, you know, have a little bit of this kind of humor in there, and how to target the younger. For example, I remember when we were first talking to him, he said, yes, it's middle school, but I do have some younger readers, so you have to have, especially for the boys, you have to have smelly stuff in your book.
Slimy stuff.
Slimy stuff, yeah. Does that answer the question, or yes? Are there other questions? I'm going to then pose some questions to the authors, and I'm going to make them. We're going to kind of play musical chairs here. Since Ross talked about writing, I want you to talk briefly about. Well, you've talked about publishing because you talked about your editor and all mm-hmm. of that. So I want you to talk briefly about how you market.
Marketing would be the weakest leg of my experience as a writer. I start to get impatient with the process in the same way that you described yourself being impatient with what it was like to put all of the elements of that book together and turn it, or the project, and turn it into a book. I think right now, to be perfectly frank, I'm probably running scared from the marketing part, and I have a rationalization. Well, I mean, I've got to write another book. I don't have time for it. I need to get over that attitude because the marketing is critical. I do have to say, though, that I don't like the idea of pigeonhole marketing, you know, figuring out which audience I want to read to sell the most books. I'm a bit of a kind of stubborn, hidebound, and probably foolishly idealistic about that. If I were really businesslike about the writing and I truly needed to make money from my writing, I would probably have to do some adjusting about my attitude about that. To me, the book is loaded with all the things I've been dying to express, and that's how I feel about my next book. I don't know if I'll ever be a very strong marketer, but I've did 14 book talks, the book launch, and of course as each one went down, smaller and smaller audiences. I learned one more thing to say about it. I decided to go back for the second attempt and go beyond the 14. Even Portsmouth Library said, you know what, unless they're really famous, we can't get anyone to come and hear you talk. Yeah, and I started getting that. Then you run into the problem of bookstores say, well, I don't have any room on my shelf for you. I ran into the problem and will continue to run into the problem of a bookstore. Well, Barnes & Noble, a good example. They can't see why they should have a little shelf in the corner for writers who live in the community because they aren't in their system. It's tragic. It's really unfortunate, and I think communities need to give a damn about their creative people and help them give an audience, no matter how small. That's all.
Yeah, I'll follow up on that with a story about Jeff Deck, who was a guest on our show last month, and he's been on here twice. He's been on the show twice. A wonderful guy. We've known him for a long time, and he just published his third book, and he had published one. His first book he published in Random House, so that's big time.
Yeah.
And then after that, he went to self-publishing, and he published a book, kind of paranormal, and what is it?
The Chronicles,
yeah, of Mark Huntley. It's kind of paranormal and so forth. And this third one is paranormal, and he has also self-published it. But the point, to Ross's point, his book release was at a little something in South Berwick, Maine. It's a cute little store with all, I can't even describe it, but it's odds and ends of all different kinds and local crafts and all different kinds. Beautiful store.
Is it on Main Street?
It's off Main Street, or it's on, right outside the center there in South Berwick. We went to his release, and Chris was there, and he had a lot of people there The owners of the store were very supportive. He sold a lot of books. And those of us who have done book events will tell you that's hard to do. Yes. Even on your first book release, it's hard to sell a lot of books, and that's usually your best shot at selling a lot of books. So there are little stores in neighborhoods around that will support the arts. You just have to make sure that you keep your eyes and ears open. If you're an author and trying to sell your books, don't overlook the local small stores.
Can I
mention just learned today that
excuse me, sir.
One more thing. I noticed today that there's a new bookstore in Dover, New Hampshire. We live in Dover, New Hampshire. Mm. I'm a publisher. I didn't know about it. Mm. I learned about it because I look at the Dover, New Hampshire Public Library page on Facebook. And so the library supported the bookstore, which is supporting artists. Mm. That's the kind of thing you have to keep your eyes and ears open for. Yeah, Ross, go ahead.
I may have already lost what I was
going to say. Oh, sorry.
Caleb's Country Store has an excellent local authors center. I had my book in there. And they were very kind. And when I said I'm a musician, they said, well, come down and play for us. Yeah, we'd love to have you. So I played for them. I had my books. I had my art sitting all around. So that's an example of a less familiar venue that really worked. Yeah.
And Michelle, do you want to talk about marketing?
Sure. I honestly believe that marketing is a full-time job all of its own. If you're going to do it right.
Yeah. Yes.
You really have to put everything you have into it.
Yes.
And so I actually got to the point where I hired somebody to find the venues and find the places that I could do the events and do the book readings and get it out there. And I actually had a really great couple of experiences, actually more than one. So Dover Library, I did an event at the Dover Library, and it was my second event, and even though I teach often for a living, it was terrifying because when I teach, I'm not talking about myself. And when you're talking about your book, you're talking about yourself, and it's a whole different experience.
Yeah.
And also, this first book is a very touching story that is really close to my heart. And so to keep talking about it, you know, there's a whole healing process that happens too. But it was packed. I was blown away. Marilyn was there. And Susan was there. I was blown away by how many people came, and that I still needed to keep myself composed. But I was so excited to see that much interest. And I believe that everybody bought a book that night. And so it was just very, very exciting to see how this actually happens. And then another place that really helped me launch was a place that I've been doing animal Reiki work app for over 10 years, and she's always been very supportive, and she said, I'll do a book launching for you here, and we'll have food and we'll have an event and you can read if you want to, and she marketed it, I marketed it, and it was all people that she knew and I knew, and it's an animal based book, so this place was an ideal location, and again it was incredibly successful, and I sold a lot of books that night too. So I think if you really focus on getting it out there and doing the readings and speaking to people, and that there is the possibility of doing really well. What I'm finding with my book, because it's a quick read, it's a relatively quick read. Most people that pick it up don't put it down until it's finished. And then they give it to somebody else. And they say, oh, here, yeah. I think you'd really enjoy this book.
Familiar.
So. Yeah. I have lots of books that have been sold that are all getting recycled to other people, which is great because that was what I wanted. I wanted the book out there, but you're not selling the books. And I wouldn't ever say to someone, don't give the book to somebody else.
They should put a lock on it. Hey, I can't get in there.
Well,
Ross,
I think that was a great answer.
Finding the right venue, finding a venue that's related to your book, like Michelle did with that, what was the name of the dog?
Oh, it's called Club Canine down in Portsmouth, New Hampshire. Oh.
You did another one too, some dog wash type of place. They do doggy daycare.
Yeah, that's the place.
Oh, is that the place? Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Wolf Meow, that new store.
That's a brand new store in Dover.
Yep.
Have you done that?
I haven't, no.
Yeah. That's an interesting possibility.
Yeah, getting in early is good too, when they're just opening up. I want to mention one other very unusual venue for a book event. We were researching for my book we went to the Trolley Museum in Kennebunkport, and there was a guy there in one of the rooms. He had written a book that had something to do with trolleys, and he was having his book release. And it wasn't like history of trolleys. It was a murder mystery that happened to have trolleys involved with it somehow. So he was doing a book event there, so I made a mental note. This is a place where I want to, you know. I'm also thinking of going to places like that. I read one good article online about a guy down in Cambridge who had such a good pre-release that he was getting paid gigs to talk about the book that he hadn't even published yet. Nice. And so he said, you know, if you find the right venue, wow, the research you've done for your book will be of interest to those people. So if you've done research on the Boston subway, the people who are in the trolley, you know, trolley fans will probably show up to hear you talk about it, because you'll have some nugget that they don't have, and they'll have some nugget that you don't have. And they'll, you know, fans love to talk about the thing they're a fan of. So I do want to mention that to people who are trying to market a book that has some kind of research behind it, especially historical novels. Find the venues where you can do a presentation before you release your book. Hopefully those people that came to your presentation will then buy your book. Other questions? Okay, what was the page number? 182, okay. I'm going to wrap it up. I want to once again remind everybody to check out the podcast. Go to mottpublishing.net. I want to thank our authors, Ross Batchelder and Michelle Lowry, for presenting tonight. I want to thank WSCA Community Radio for providing us with this space and giving us support. And I want to thank Nofret Cooking and Marilyn Carter and Mott Publishing for providing the refreshments. There's beer and wine, and tonight we have cheese and crunchies, but we also have Mexican egg salad, which is, and the recipe is on page 182 of Nofret Cooking. So run out and buy some avocados. That's the secret ingredient in Mexico.